You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, it is Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. Maybe there's a calm when you look at the surface, but when you actually look at what lurks beneath, well, there's lots of interesting trends taking place, a lot of things going on. John, what's lurking beneath the surface of this calmed stock market and economy? Summer vacations, life is normal again, right?
Hey, Carrie. Yeah, we are halfway through 2022. Are you halfway through a year at the end of June or the beginning of June?
I guess the end, but okay. Close enough.
We're close. 2022 is halfway over. Hell of a year so far. But yeah, you're right. It's calmer now in terms of the headlines than it has been for a while. Stocks are, I haven't checked them lately, but they were kind of, up a little bit earlier in the day and then down slightly, but nothing really dramatic. But that hides a lot of stuff going on under the surface that is still pretty disturbing. And a lot of it is in energy. Well, energy and food, which are going to be the two of the big stories for the next couple of years, at least, it looks like. But natural gas is through the roof lately. It went up by almost 10% a couple of days ago in one day. And, we do a lot with natural gas. It's necessary for a lot of things. You generate more electricity with natural gas than we do with coal. People use it to heat their houses. Agriculture uses it to make fertilizer. Yeah. So that price, the price of natural gas going up that much, means that the price of all those other things will rise dramatically in the year ahead. And then gasoline, a related issue with oil being high, is at an all-time high in a lot of places. At the beginning of the summer driving season, usually there's upward pressure on demand, of course, which tightens supplies, which raises prices during the summer driving season. And we're at record levels before that. So, we're looking at dramatically higher prices for a lot of things for a while now. It doesn't look like that's going to go away anytime soon, because unless the end of the Russia-Ukraine war, which hopefully comes soon, causes the oil markets to calm back down, which it still might not happen, because they're, Russia is still selling its oil out there. And it's very hard to create new refining capacity in petroleum. So that's just not happening. So we're kind of tight, no matter where you look at it, in energy. And then food, as you mentioned before we went live here, the destruction of our food processing plants continues. There was a big egg plant, a major egg plant, a large part of America's eggs come from this plant, and it was torched during the night and damaged pretty severely. So, Bill Gates is just, he's a bad guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, we're going to have food shortages. I don't think it's going to be like the third world, where when corn disappears, everybody starves and then they riot. I think we're going to have these sporadic shortages. Problem is, there's always items that you can't find in the store. All right. That's always been the case. Inventory bottlenecks, shipping problems, etc. So a lot of what is blamed on the supply chain, it's just normal glitches in the supply chain that you can't get stuff. But what we've had now is way more than that. But I would say 10% of what we ascribe to supply chain difficulties is normal. All right. Probably 5 to 10% of the items you can't find at any given time in certain stores, because who knows why. And especially now, everything comes from overseas. So you're going to have more glitches. But what we're going to see here is like something we've never seen before in the United States. And the prices are going to go just way, way higher. We didn't even talk. We haven't talked in a while. The baby formula shortage. How did that happen?
Well, that one actually at least has an explanation, because the FDA shut down a really big baby formula plant with no plan for replacing the supply that was lost that way. Meanwhile, the government was shipping massive amounts of baby formula to the border to give to people who come here illegally with little kids. Yeah. We have such a compassionate government. You know, they really care about those illegal immigrants. Not so much about regular American babies, though, apparently. But anyhow, that's one that can be fixed reasonably easily. They've already greenlit the plant to go back up, and maybe baby formula won't be an issue pretty soon. But a lot of other basic food, which is something we're really not used to. You know, the last real period of shortages of anything was the 1970s with oil. You and I are just about old enough to remember the gas lines where it was an odd day or an even day, and that's the only time you could fill your tank up, and there was a line around the block and you had to wait for 2 hours to get gas, and then you'd get up there and the pumps would run out of gas right before you got, you know, pretty terrifying. And that's the last time we've had anything like this. So today's kids, you know, and anybody younger than a middle-aged boomer doesn't remember anything like this, you know, and so to them it's all new, and new things tend to be scarier than things that have repeated a few times. So I'm sure it must be terrifying for people who can't find the kinds of food that they normally buy, or else have to pay way up for it, and can't afford to put gas in their car, and you know. And meanwhile, something Biden did just lately is so tone deaf that it bears mentioning. He's raising the amount of ethanol that has to go in gasoline as a way of lowering oil prices, which of course will make no difference at all for oil prices and gasoline prices. But it takes corn off the market at a time when food shortages in general are getting worse. So it seems like that's the kind of thing that that betrays a lack of understanding of the problem and of people's reaction to the problem. So not only do we have these problems, we don't have anybody who seems to understand how to fix them, you know?
Hey, well, to the administration, the solution to all the problems is buy an EV. That'll solve everything.
That's the other thing. The guys in this administration are saying, yeah, well, I didn't have any problem because I just drove my electric car halfway across the country. So I drove past all these gas stations. It was great. Yeah. So you, American citizens, go out and buy $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 electric cars. That'll solve your gas problem.
Yeah, that'll solve all the problems. Well, I had just happened to have one, and it definitely has solved my problem with high energy prices. But I am making this prediction here, John, that electricity rates throughout the country will close to double in the next 24 months, perhaps quicker.
Well, they have to, with natural gas and coal both being at almost record levels now, right? Because that's the input for most power generating plants.
Yeah, well, it's deeper than that. Because what many of you don't understand is that the energy market has changed dramatically in this country, the natural gas market. For one thing, from the 70s to now, we use nat gas for a lot more things than we used to replace oil because it was so much cheaper. The other thing is, there used to be these multi-decade take-or-pay contracts. Take-or-pay, which means either take the gas or you pay for it, but either way, you're paying for it. And what this did, the pipeline companies did it with the producers, and the utilities did it with the pipeline companies. So what this did was make electric prices very stable. Sometimes the gas companies cleaned up, and other times they got killed, and the same with the pipelines. We don't have decade-long or multi-decade take-or-pay contracts. We have 3 to 5 year contracts at most, which means at any given time, probably half of the contracts are expiring that are out there. All right. And when these gas contracts were negotiated last, gas was at $2.50 per MCF. That's 1,000 cubic feet. Now, when they come up for renewal, I don't know that they'll be at $10.50 or $10 where Nat Gas is heading now. $10.20, according to Nick Santiago, is the resistance point. But they're certainly going to be higher than $2.50 or $3. The other thing is that when these contracts were last negotiated, we had tens of thousands of shut-in wells. Wells that were shut down because they couldn't make any money off of pumping the nat gas. Now nat gas, 20% of our production is heading overseas. Then combine this with an administration that thinks we should all be, getting fans and let the wind blow to generate electricity in your house, basically get a windmill, and is making no steps to increase production, which petroleum energy production goes up 2% a year around the world, except when it goes up 4 or 5. This is a suicidal path that you have to wonder what the motivation is, John.
Yeah, it does seem like public policy in a lot of ways just makes no sense or is not addressing today's problems. It's addressing some other goal or problem or whatever that really doesn't apply today. And I think you can trace this back to the whole globalism thing when the powers that be set up these long multinational supply chains without understanding that once they start using those supply chains as a weapon, in other words, threatening to kick people out of them or off the international bank clearing systems, that would break those supply chains and that would mean we can't get the stuff that comes from those supply chains. And they went ahead and did it without understanding it. And so, you know, we're using the dollar and the SWIFT system and our trade relationships as a weapon to keep people in line with the whims of the American empire. And it's leading to all kinds of disruptions that can't really be untangled and fixed very easily because, once you antagonize somebody in the way that we are antagonizing Russia and China and India and so many other countries, they're just going to bypass your systems. And that's what's happening out there right now. So we're in a transition where, first of all, we're bringing manufacturing capacity back home in whatever country. Everybody wants to be able to make the crucial stuff themselves so they aren't reliant on other countries who might or might not be friends, which is very disruptive and very expensive. And then we've got a lot of countries just bypassing the existing structures like Russia and China, trading with each other in their own currencies, and India joining that party and just bypassing the dollar and the IMF and the SWIFT system. And that's going to be very disruptive. So it doesn't look like any of this gets fixed anytime soon. And it doesn't look like these guys even understand what the problem is.
Well, that's a great point because Janet Yellen was interviewed on CNN and she admitted, "I don't understand inflation." I mean, hey, like, is that disingenuous? Is she really a moron, or is this a narrative?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Goldterra Resource Corp. is a gold exploration company that has assembled a highly prospective district-scale land position on the doorstep of the city of Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories. Goldterra is currently focused on expanding and delineating gold resources at the company's Yellowknife City Gold Project with a goal of discovering over 5 million ounces. With ready access to infrastructure and multiple high-grade gold discoveries, Goldterra is on track to re-establishing Yellowknife as one of the premier gold mining districts in Canada. Goldterra trades as YGT in Toronto and YGTFF on the OTC. For more information, go to goldterracorp.com. That's goldterracorp.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
You know, I was on another show the other day, and I referred to the people in charge of the U.S. and the global financial system as morons and got roasted in the comments because obviously they're not morons. Obviously, they're evil geniuses who are working out a long plan, which ends with us being enslaved by them. And, you know, there's an element of truth to that, too. These guys are acting stupid.
Oh, well.
But maybe in the service of a plan that is more sinister than stupid. We'll see.
I thought you would have gotten roasted for insulting morons, but
That would be a legitimate response for that too. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Janet Yellen is, she's one of the shocking ones. I mean, there are quite a few people in the US government right now who, when you listen to them, it's not obvious how they got these high-level jobs. And Janet Yellen is one step below Biden, who is one step below Kamala Harris. So Janet Yellen is up there with the most baffling people in charge right now, because it's not obvious when you listen to her that she has any idea how economics works or finance or anything, you know. And
so true. Her, so
yeah, true. And she's apparently broadening the scope of the Treasury's responsibilities and the Fed's now to, you know, climate justice and things that you can't really address with monetary policy, but she's saying those words for political effect. And it's not even clear she understands what any of that means. It's just shocking. You know, it seems like we can find better people to staff these jobs instead of just political hacks who don't understand what the job is.
Yeah, or don't want to know what the job is, right? I mean, let's face it. This is the logical outcome of the Federal Reserve system, right? I mean, this is what we always knew it was going to come down to, right?
Yeah, we have a whole generation of people in charge now who for their entire adult lives have lived in an environment of easy money where the government had this amazing power to bail out anybody who gets into trouble by just creating new currency out of thin air. And that breeds, that's kind of what happens with an aristocracy that's been inbreeding for a really long time. You get these really stupid people at the top because they've never had to be anything other than stupid.
Yeah.
In order to keep on running the system. Well, I think we're getting towards the end of that now, where the Fed is losing the power to just create another $10 trillion and bail out every idiot in sight who over-leveraged themselves and can't figure out how to get out of it. And these guys are baffled by the fact that there's no more adult supervision. They don't have this superpower anymore to be able just to create money out of thin air, because now there's inflation, which is made worse by doing this thing they've already done, always done, that they thought was completely benign, and they have no idea how to deal with it. So when they talk, it's not a surprise that it doesn't make any sense, because the world has changed and left them behind, and they don't have any kind of new language to deal with the world that's evolving.
So it's the Dukes of Moral Hazard. My favorite TV show from way back when. But really, these guys, they're just kind of destroying everything in their path. They're like that that universe Star Destroyer from Star Trek. Anything in its path, any planet, whatever, sucks it in and destroys everything. And that's what these guys are like. So, man.
But so anyhow, what comes from that is some kind of gigantic financial disruption. Obviously, you know, all your listeners know that. And it could be that that's getting closer, because the Fed has to do something about double-digit inflation. They can't not address that. But to address it, they have to raise interest rates and shrink the Fed's balance sheet to the point where most of the leveraged speculated community just implodes. And they can't do that either, you know? So they can't let inflation run free, but they can't do anything to stop inflation without blowing up the rest of the economy. And there's an election coming, you know, so they are really in a box right now. But that since there is no way out of the box, it's not a surprise that they don't know how to get out.
Not a surprise in the least, John. Well, all the problems of Job. By the way, if you noticed, the Soros-backed San Francisco DA just got booted out of office. And to make matters worse, the person responsible for picking his successor is none other than London Breed, the mayor of San Francisco, who said the way to solve the homelessness problem and the filth associated with it and the waste problems, all that stuff, is basically to teach the homeless to pick up after themselves. So this is one of the intellects of our time running what used to be an incredible city that you and I both have really fond memories of. And now... well, maybe at least they'll start prosecuting people that break into cars, shoplifters, all that type of stuff, right? Criminals, because murders are up there, crime is up, car break-ins, robberies, everything is going wrong in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. It's really a shame to see what's happening to some what used to be amazing cities. Chicago is like that too. You know, it was Chicago was a very consequential place at one time, and now it's a complete afterthought. Nobody in their right mind would move there, and most of the people who live there are trying to move to Texas or Florida. So,
it's every city.
Yeah, I think we need a compromise at some point where we decide to apply laws equally to everybody, which means go after the corporate criminals who are completely protected by their campaign contributions at the same time that we go after lower level criminals. You know, if you riot and you burn down a store, you've committed a property crime. You go to jail for it. If you shoplift, you go to jail for it. If you embezzle a bunch of money from a company, or you rip off your customers if you're a big bank, or you front run trades if you're a brokerage house, you go to jail. You know, if we could do that across the board, or if you're, Hunter and Joe Biden, or the Clintons, or, you know, the Trumps to an extent, and you profit from political corruption, you go to jail. You know, if we developed a sense of moral consistency, it would be a lot easier to deal with the whole law and order issue almost really across the board. And I think there's a political platform in there somewhere that I hope somebody gets a hold of and runs with sometime.
Well, law and order is always appealing. And when you have crime out of control in so many of these cities, like Chicago, like Seattle, San Francisco, LA, and it goes hand in hand with homelessness, all right, something more extreme has to be done. And this also points to the need for real judicial reform, because our courts have turned into places where, look, as having been a lawyer for all these years, 30 plus years, I can tell you that these things are so inefficient, Dickinsonian in their results, and really are not protecting the people. Not, you know, one of the primary obligations in a democratic country, any country for that matter, hopefully, is to peacefully settle disputes among its citizens, protect you from criminals and threats both within and without. And we're doing a horrible job on all counts. Litigation, you know, extremely expensive. You know, just to put somebody on trial for a crime could cost $10,000 a day. And then when you add in all of these things that have been deliberately created to make the system more cumbersome, less flexible, less reactive, it's a disaster. We almost need to start from the ground up and, you know, maybe privatize big chunks of the judicial system, because I know judges, and there's some hardworking judges, but most of them that I've encountered either aren't too sharp, they couldn't make it in private practice. My point is, this system is really rotten to the core, and it creates results that are shocking. And then you get a guy like whatever his name was, who is the son of Bernadine Dorn, you know, Kathy Bowden, rather, and he becomes the DA, and he just lets everybody go. And I think people are realizing we want law and order, we want justice, and we don't have either.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a guy running for governor of California who's a writer who specializes in this stuff. And I think his latest book was called San Francisco, about how current policy is ruining these big, formerly very cool cities. And if, you know, as part of the campaign, his ideas get out there, that's going to be really interesting, because he's got some really provocative research that has been done that he touts, that kind of points a way to fix these big cities. So, you know, that's a start, that we debate these things and come up with the right answer and then try to implement them. But yeah, you know, we're kind of a corrupt society across the board where nothing really works anymore. It could be that we've hit peak complexity where we just built complex systems that just can't run, which is what I always thought about a city in general. Like, how do you run something that has all these roads that have to be fixed and sewers running under the roads and wiring everywhere and police? It seems like an impossible task to make all of that stuff work together. So
the first thing would be to stop treating drug addiction, drug issues as a crime, and treat it as public health crisis, all right? And then to treat homelessness as a public health crisis, not as a housing shortage, all right? You combine those two things, because a lot of people going through the judicial system are homeless, and the judicial system is not the place to be treating mental illness. It doesn't work. So 25%, it was estimated the last time I read it, of the people in jails, not necessarily prisons, but jails, those are the city lockups, are homeless, all right, and mentally ill. Eventually, every homeless person gets involved with the police. So on the one hand, I don't think you can just send social workers when people are shooting up a place and say, please stop. But on the other hand, when it comes to these issues that are mental health issues, mental health crisis issues, we need a program that addresses the mental health crisis in the country. And, you know, it seems like nobody wants to acknowledge that that's what's going on here, John. And it's really, you know, it's just like you got cancer, take two aspirin and call me in the morning. Okay, you were caught doing whatever you were doing, go to jail for 30 days. You know, Giuliani, when he was mayor, one of the most successful programs he had, he never publicized, it was called Life in Jail, Life in Prison a Day at a Time. And they would just keep locking everybody up every day for whatever infraction they were committing. And eventually they just decided they didn't want to be in jail, so they'd stop doing it. It's a form of behavioral modification. Do I think that's the right way to handle this? Absolutely not. But we don't have an alternative way right now, and that is the biggest problem. Hey, well, we could go on and on and on, and if you want us to go on, just let us know. Shoot us an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Make sure you go to John's site, dollarcollapse.com, sign up for the newsletter, and go over to our site, FSN, Financial Survival Network. Sign up for our newsletter. John, we will catch up with you in a couple weeks.
Okay, see you, Kerry.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.